This is the American Digital Banking Podcast hosted by CBQI. CBQI are the leading providers of digital transformation for the financial markets in the Americas. With a focus on predictive artificial intelligence, DevOps, and cloud migration, we provide managed services including building, implementing, and supporting financial market systems. I'm your host, Deborah Boyland, and today we're joined by Mark Malilski and Miles Schwartz. Mark and Miles are the joint co-founders of Zoom Rails. Zoom Rails leverages open banking software to deliver end-to-end payment solutions, including KYC, onboarding, instant payments, invoicing, reconciliation, and more. Hi, Mark and Miles. It's lovely to have you both joining us.
We're happy to be here.
For the audience, could you give us a quick rundown of who you are and how you think Zoom Rails are helping consumers?
So yeah, basically what Zoom Rails is we built, I think, what is the first open banking instant payment gateway that we can really see. What it really does is it streamlines what we call the financial interaction. So it's our belief that for payments to evolve, we have to kind of take some steps back and streamline the onboarding. So we work typically in sort of the financial sector or marketplaces where there is a level of risk and validation that needs to take place with the user. So we've combined aggregation, insights, KYC into the payments process to not only maximize that client interaction, reduce drop-off, but collect all the payment information available, understand the client, make sure they are who they say they are. And if there's multiple payment rails available, we'll tokenize different rails so that you can either move funds instantly, set up pads, and sort of streamline that whole end-to-end process.
Do you mind if I ask who your target market are?
Yeah. So our target market is pretty vast as payments touches a lot of markets, but it go from banks to neobanks to crypto exchanges, to investment platforms, to lenders. But then also we have a SaaS model where we integrate into software as a service companies. And these SaaS companies integrate Zoom and then offer it downstream. So whether it be a loan management software, member management software, e-commerce companies. So we sell within, for example, let's say to the loan management software company, they integrate it and offer it down to all their lenders. So we're able to sell one to many because through one integration, we could be hitting 70 different accounts or hundreds of merchants, and they have different hierarchies and can manage their entire business through our partner portal.
Sounds very exciting. What are some of the challenges your clients go through and how do your solutions help them?
Yeah, so our clients want to offer an end-to-end digital experience. However, they need to piece together too many providers to solve individual pieces of the puzzle. So we put the whole puzzle together. So as Mark always says, payments is problem solving. It's just a puzzle and putting all the right pieces together. So by having one provider, minimizes all the friction for the user. So what Zoom Rails has done by putting the pieces together, we put in a neat box. So like I mentioned that we work with investment platforms. So for example, like with Questrade, we work with their investment platform, which is like the Canadian version of Robinhood. So what we do is we enable them to allow individuals to deposit funds in real time. Before us, it would take 2 days because we go through the bill pay network. So although instant rails existed before Zoom, Questrade could not leverage these rails because there's no way to validate the name, make sure the person who they say they were, validate the source of the funds and move the funds in real time. So we put a bunch of software together to validate the name, validate the source of the funds, make sure it wasn't an impersonator and really enable instant payments, but without the risk and the risk of chargebacks, the risk of fraud and all that.
How has your customer acquisition process changed as digital transformation has exploded across the financial markets?
So we actually launched a few weeks before the pandemic, or actually the week before the pandemic. So we never had a different sales cycle pre-COVID, but what we've noticed is during COVID, like we both come from the fintech world, be from data aggregation, marketing payments, that so for every brick and mortar store that is being built, that hundreds of digital experiences are being created. So they now digital transformation went from an idea and a plan to a necessity. So in the past, I remember when I used to sell to banks or neobanks or Fortune 500 companies, the sales cycles would be 18 to 24 months. Now they've been significantly compressed.
How do you think digital banking transformation has changed the market over the last few years?
Well, I think the big thing to look at is that the consumer demands have really shifted it. I don't think it's necessarily been from the top down, but the bottom up is that consumers want things quicker. The second, the internet changes it, you can buy anything you want and have it delivered to your house on Amazon. And I think that changes like the market perception. So why should banking be any different? You know, it started with people wanting loans. So they didn't want to go into the bank and, you know, whether it was they didn't want to deal with rejection or they didn't want to have that, or it's just, hey, it's 9 o'clock at night, kids to bed, I got some time to do that. And that sort of became as a service. And then you came with self-directed investing. And for us, you know, I think this is an opportunity, and because the pandemic forced everyone home. So in branch and all that sort of stuff, you know, you had to find a solution, and people were more comfortable with it, where the barrier to entry potentially could have just been, you know, just, hey, I'm not too comfortable kind of doing this financial interaction or giving information online. It was a necessity. So I think it was sort of like, you know, a shot in the arm that was needed in an essence just for that sector. But it really has sort of now changed perceptions. And I think we're going to see more and more, and it might be reluctant from the top, but I think it's going to be the only way that distribution can be maximized.
How do you feel digital transformation has impacted the user experience your service delivers?
Well, I think it streamlined it. I think the reality is the way, you know, quick example is that we could, you know, a loan company now can make an instant underwriting decision in about 5 seconds if someone has a credit worthiness, because we can digest their bank account, you know, send out 200 different endpoints that sort of analyze that bank statement for risk, potential fraud, what's happened in the past. And if, you know, within those 200 boxes, someone falls into a category that's, you know, hey, like I'm comfortable with that level of risk, you know, not only did we validate it, you can also give them their funds in 7 milliseconds. So, you know, if someone's looking for capital, it's not this elongated process anymore. It's, hey, you know, Zoomrails is going to give you the box that your company can use for that digital transformation. And you can worry about trying to acquire new clients, not having to, you know, piece together seven different things so that it has a, you know, an even workflow. You know, so we're removing that level of friction. But also for the client side, it's like they don't really care that whether they're using 7 things or Zoomrails. You know, people want instant access to their services or capital.
How have you found the war for talent has affected your business?
Well, I think we're unique in that we were kind of like, we never really had huge plans to have a corporate office in Montreal or wherever. We kind of, you know, we were born into this world of COVID, and we're, you know, we kind of made the decision quickly. It's like, hey, Miles, he lives in Montreal. I live in Nova Scotia in the middle of nowhere. And I think that was sort of built into the subculture that comes like, hey, we're going to work from home. Now, the good thing is that, hey, we were able to sort of attract people who kind of, whether it's fell into that culture, is like, hey, you know, I don't need to live in Montreal to be a developer for a company. We were able to sort of go that way. I think later on in COVID is probably where more people, or kind of the tail end, where people started to feel, hey, like there was a war for talent. And we've had some, you know, we've had to go to war and sort of offer more, or, you know, but I think a real value add has been, hey, like if we're going to work for home, like for developers, it's, you know, you're going to be a self-starter. And there's pros and cons, but I generally think we're sort of in sort of an early phase. I think it potentially could get worse.
We have offices in Halifax, so we're big Nova Scotia fans. Yeah. Mark, I've noticed that you have arcade games in your office. Is that something that's helped you in the war for talent?
People, it's certainly something people talk about. It's like, yeah, I'm just someone, you know, listen, I live in the middle of nowhere. I have a kid, I do Zoom rails, and I unwind with video games. It's sort of like, that's how I can sort of turn it off at night. There's a few gamers in our company, and, but you know, there's been people who come over. We have a few, Nova Scotia and the Maritimes, but I need something to distract it, so I don't go to bed just thinking about Zoom rails.
Games definitely used to get a bad rap, but I think as kind of like more our generation have grown up, that's changed.
Yeah.
I've played two video games obsessively for the last 10 years, Skyrim and Witcher 3, and that's it. Like I can't play anything else. And I get like withdrawal when I'm away from Witcher 3. So
Yeah, my sort of unwind for the night is FIFA, and that's just sort of like, you know, I'll play, you know, a 15-year-old Albanian online and see how that goes. But yeah, that's sort of like how I can, like, all right, this is how I'm gonna unwind.
Are you a
I'm more of the original with like the Mario Kart and stuff in the same games I play with like when I'm a kid.
Do we have any Call of Duty people here?
I used to.
So we've seen quite a few fintech businesses doing mass layoffs in the last few months. What do you think's going on, and what are your kind of thoughts on this?
Yeah, so it's unfortunate there's been a lot of layoffs. And one thing we have noticed is, especially in the fintech world and the startup world, is a lot of companies are less focused on profitability and are more focused on building like the grand story or the grand vision, and rather than going after profit. So when the market is at an all-time high, like the grand visions work. But when the market dries up, you need actual revenues, and these companies are starting to get exposed. So we've encountered many companies even that reach out to Zoom who don't even process payments yet, but are valued in crazy valuation. So it almost like it's like you can see the bubble is there. And it's like the saying goes, when the tide goes out, you'll see who's swimming naked. And I guess just too many people are swimming naked. Sorry about the visual, but like, I guess that's kind of like where it's at right now and where the lay of the land is.
Yeah, definitely. How have you responded to the changes in work environments, and how are you enabling your team to deliver to the best of their ability?
Well, one of the things I've always kind of said is like, you know, and I, to take a step back with Zoom, like I had the idea in 2017, but it kind of went nowhere. But it took off when I met Miles, right? And then from there, it took off when we met Marcel, and then it took off when Mike joined. And the common thread is that people make the company special, right? It's no one individual. There's really no ego. And I think that's built into the culture. And, you know, someone who probably doesn't get enough credit externally at our company is our HR person, Yelena, who I vigorously fought to get her to come join the company because I think she agreed with that. And we really want to make sure like the people and everything around them are taken care of. Like, you know, something happens, they feel their support. Because you kind of miss that when you don't get to see each other. Meanwhile, I didn't see each other for like 2 years, essentially, as we were separated. But like, and I think that's like ensuring that like, you know, people, you know, they feel that, because in the end, they're the ones who make the product. So we're just trying to like, you know, I always say, if you work at Zoom Rails, you know, we think there's something special about you. And like, really, you know, my job is essentially making sure that the chess pieces are organized in the most efficient manner. And I really, and I think a lot of that stems like, you know, the culture you'll create with the individuals, and, you know, not to be like a Michael Scott for the office, but no, there was some sort of truth to sort of, you know, being, you know, concerned about your fellow employee. And I think that's something that we really strive to do well here.
HR definitely have a very rough job, you know, like for marketing, yeah. from us, it's kind of like, okay, we're going to do this and this, and this is how we learn about it. But to like talk to people is, it's like its own thing, isn't it? And it's its own skill to actually be able to know what people are feeling and how to make them feel better.
Yeah, they're like, you know, and it's, you know, it's, I'm very aware maybe that might not be my strong suit, but I really do think that, you know, it's one of the more undervalued hires. A strong HR person really doesn't, is night and day for the company.
Definitely. Yeah, it's way more than just bringing on the talent. It's creating the whole company culture, making sure like working with everyone, like it definitely is a very undervalued position in a company, especially in a startup.
Definitely agree. What role would you say resource augmentation providers play at your company?
I don't know. It's kind of hard. It's not a whole lot that plays in our company. It's more so there's an element of just being a self-starter, and like we kind of have an overview, and like everyone has like the tasks, but I don't know. I wouldn't say that there's a whole lot, to be honest. I think there's still an old school element to that. Maybe as we grow, but it really hasn't been a pressing issue as of yet.
Where do you think digital banking and digital payments are heading in the next year? And what kind of changes do you see coming our way?
Yeah, you know, me, Miles has known me and sort of to put almost a tinfoil hat on for the years. Like, I don't think this is, you know, like where I kind of, I've been very much in the weeds in like that specific sector of like how money moves at the bank level. And I know a lot of payments that people think of like Stripe, PayPal, and credit card processing, but my focus has been in sort of the risk and the elements between moving between bank accounts. And that's why we built our own data aggregation and our insights and AI engines to understand like, hey, there's going to be instant payments. It's going to trickle down at some point in time. Canada is unique in that, you know, they've been saying it's been coming for the last 5 years. It really hasn't. And my pessimistic thing would be, no, it's not coming. And it, like, because the banks can't figure out how to do it. And payments at the bank level in Canada are like, it's the bottom, it's the basement, it's treasury management. You know, why would a bank spend invest a dollar in payments if it's going to maybe, if it might lose a dollar, where if they spent a dollar in marketing or mortgages or lending, they're going to make three. And that's kind of now caught up here in Canada, where it's just like, you know, we're sending files back and forth to move money, and like trillions of dollars move every month with a really archaic method. You know, and hats off to the Canadian Payments Association for stabilizing that network. But in a year, Canada, I don't really know. I don't see a whole lot. I see a lot of people who are going to evangelize about how open banking is going to do this and instant payments going to do that, but they're not doing anything. They're not touching the metal. They're not building products. They're creating an own economy of sort of self-interest to propel ideas. Well, the thing I think that's really unique about Zoomrails is like, no, we built it. They're like, we're the only company in Canada that can move money between bank accounts with no liability. Like, and our biggest problem is sort of putting that on the market and saying, hey, there's a completely different way that no one really knows about. We've tried to sort of fill in the blanks and where, you know, there's gaps in rails, we've built software around it. And I really think, you know, you're going to see more companies like us who are going to force the market forward instead of it coming from the top down. It's going to be bottom up, not top down.
Are there any particular tools or technologies that you think will make a big impact in the coming year?
Well, I'm going to assume every other payments person is going to say blockchain and crypto. And I'm going to say no. I think that's just it, that's just commodities, you know, digital commodities moving back and forth. I think there's just going to be enhancements in understanding risk and tools to sort of, like I said, if you're going to move money instantly, you've got to adjudicate for risk. You know, in an ideal world, there's sort of a central risk where you can kind of see who was blacklist and people aren't trying to source them out themselves. There's sort of a unity between payment processors so we can thrive the market. But yeah, that, you know, I really think it's going to be, you know, until that happens or something from, you know, there's changes at the top and how we do file communications or Visa or even Interact in Canada release a new product, I think it's going to be same as it has been for the last forever.
So a bit more specifically, as we're focused on the Americas and we're co-Canada, well, you can't hear it from my accent, but CPQI is also headquartered in Canada. Where do you see Canada and Montreal having any changes in banking and specifically, you know, banking regulations? Do you see any kind of regulations coming in these regions?
Well, there is a bunch of stuff coming down the pipeline from like the Retail Payments Act. You know, the one thing that was really frustrating, especially in our industry, is in Canada, you know, we had the trucker convoy protest, and then all of a sudden everyone was like, oh, how are they getting their money? It's got to be this. And then they one day at 6 a.m., a whole new set of rules came out. And then by 12, they were all redacted, except for a few, because they made no sense. And it really is like, in kind of put a light on this industry, in which was completely unfair, because in 5 minutes I was able to find out who was what, how those convoy protesters were getting money. Like, it wasn't a big secret, and it had nothing to do with a Canadian company, which was the most mind-boggling part. But they created all these rules that really kind of didn't reflect the true environment. And then so we're in this period where, oh, it looks like they're going to change a bunch of rules because of an event that really didn't have anything to do with Canadian companies. And it seems like there's this like, hey, we're gonna make a bunch of different changes. Like AMF dropped a lot of its stuff. Now it's all done by Revenue Quebec. And FinTrack is kind of getting rid of PSPs and it's gonna be absorbed into the Retail Payments Act, but there's still gonna be FinTrack rules. And there's gonna be extra rules for DeFi. There's gonna be extra rules for crowdfunding. And it would be great if there was like a unified approach underneath it, because I think the more that you start creating subsects, you're going to either open it up for gray areas. And I don't want that, because I really do think there needs to be super strong rules that we all play by, because the less bad actors, the better it is for the whole environment. Like whether it's from the marketing perspective, less risk. I want that. I want very clear, strong rules. What I don't want is to start tranching out things based on industry, and then it's gonna, you know, gonna have a whole confusing tree that can change at the drop of a hat. I would really like to see actual industry experts, not from the top, but actually from like payment providers and payment service providers for the last 15 years who help collaborate on the rules, instead of just have these reactionary measures that's, you know, costs us time, energy, and effort. And we're like, well, that really doesn't do anything to help the industry. It's kind of, it's just, I don't want to say nonsense, but it's, you should be looking at the top for guidance and understanding the market, not creating confusion.
So you've mentioned both crypto and open banking. What role do you see them playing in the future of your business?
Well, open banking, we have our own open banking like platform. And, you know, whether, heaven from, manna from the heavens comes and the banks open it up, especially in Canada, that we have a nice access, I don't necessarily see it. I think, even what I've seen as like mock-ups, what they'll do, I think what we have is better and will be better for a long period of time. Crypto, we'll work with crypto companies to help streamline their process and their payments. Whether we start accepting it or not, to go back to the previous question, I don't necessarily see it because I want to avoid issues. And you're kind of in the movement of fiat funds. I think it's time to see what's going to happen in the crypto market instead of trying to influence it, if that makes sense. I think it's from a risk perspective, I think I want to see what happens when water finds its level.
Kind of crypto adjacent, how do you think blockchain will influence the financial markets?
Well, I think it already has influenced the financial markets. I think it's just a great ledger system, right? That's what it is. It's a strong ledger-based system that we can sort of, which would be utilized as an underlying technology for instant payments. I don't think that's the case right now. I've heard it's been socialized, but I think blockchain as like a technology is fantastic, and I think it has a lot of implications for payments and wallets, but not, I don't know if it's going to get the adoption at the top level of banks to sort of trickle down. I think it was more so, I think it might unfortunately have to kind of stay in the crypto and DeFi world.
We actually have a client who, like, they're really, really cool, and they are building something that uses blockchain to do FX payments instantly, instead of taking like 2 days, like B2B FX payments. So that's really cool. Do you have any advice for anyone who would like to start building a career in payments or digital banking?
I guess I would say it's the same advice no matter what industry you're in. Learn the industry, build a network, and then surround yourself with the smartest people in that industry and find out where your skill set could add most value. I don't think any industry, I think it's pretty industry agnostic advice I would take. It's like, I thought Mark was the smartest person in payments ever. And I figured I'm very good at sales and I can bring people and I have a good network, put the two together and it'll work. So find out where your strengths are, learn the industry, learn from people that are smarter than you and do that. But I don't think that's really about payments or banking, but just in general, that's just advice I'd give.
So last question, I have this thing that every single, I don't know if I've been really lucky, but everyone I've met in payments has been really, really nice, and they've always been really nice, and you guys have carried on that tradition. If anyone who has listened to this podcast would like to kind of find out more about you guys or maybe connect with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, our website is zoomrails.com, so zumrails.com, or find us, email us miles@zoomrails.com or mark@zoomrails.com, and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Deborah.
This was the American Digital Banking Podcast hosted by CBQI. Don't forget to follow us to hear more.